John Leland has assumed the awesome responsibility of telling us what hip is and just where exactly it came from. It's a subject he's familiar with, having written and edited the magazine Spin and Details. Leland's new book is called simply Hip, The History. And his all-time hip parade is topped by who else? Miles Davis, Langston Hughes, and the ramblings of Jack Kerouac.
No, San Francisco is dead. San Francisco is bleak with the fog, and the fences are cold. Oh, San Francisco, so old.
John Leland also includes some characters you might not expect. Ralph Waldo Emerson, Huckleberry Finn, Bugs Bunny. Leland writes that America's history of hip is the story of a tense relationship between outsiders and insiders, most profoundly between white Americans and African Americans. The word hip even came from Africa.
The best we can tell, hip comes from a Wolof word from West Africa, hippie or heppy, to see or to open one's eyes. And it was in use since the 1700s.
And, it's a lovely expression to see or to open one's eyes, but at what point did the 1700s word become hip in any sense that we would recognize it now?
Well, even then you can think of it as hip me to that. He's hip to what's going on. I can see. It's the enlightenment of the outsider, the person who's outside the mainstream of society but has a knowledge of what's going on outside the mainstream and also within the mainstream.
You quote Leonard Cohen saying, hip is a verdict, not an intention. Does that mean one cannot aspire to hip? One just is hip?
There's no seven secrets of highly hip people that we can lay out. It's a most elusive quality. I think that's the funny thing about the book. It was the nerdiest thing I could possibly do was sit down at my computer and sort of bury myself in this world.
Something surprising in your book is that you theorize that the emergence in the mid-1800s of four writers was sort of a moment along the path of hipness. Emerson, Thoreau, Melville, and Whitman. And Whitman, yes, of course, and Melville, pretty interesting. But Emerson and Thoreau?
Emerson, I think, has been the most prescient of them all because we wouldn't think of Emerson as the classic hipster. He's not a Jack Kerouac a century removed. But Emerson and his emphasis on the individual rather than society, on vulgar language, the low language, and on self-reliance and civil disobedience, Emerson and Thoreau there, those are all the sort of the building blocks of hip.
The other critical building block of hip, says John Leland, is the intersection of black and white. In the New World, Europeans and Africans learn new languages, songs, and religions from each other. The blues are one early example of Africans creating a new kind of music as Americans about their experiences as an oppressed people. John Leland writes that the minstrel show is another part of what he calls the cultural feedback loop between Africans and Europeans that really began in earnest in the 1800s. White performers would blacken their faces and do bizarre parodies of Southern black life with songs and comedy routines.
There's a way to look at minstrel shows as strictly a way of putting people down, as strictly of being an act of ridicule. And that's always been an element to it. But I think there's more than that. There is, why would someone want to imitate or emulate the culture that is at the bottom of the society? And why is there an interest in kind of white performers trying on being black? I think it's because there is this curiosity and a sense of cultural borrowing. I look at this as a totally American phenomenon because I think there's hip everywhere in the world now, but this mingling of the European and the African on this new soil only happened the way it did in America. And so it's the heart of who we are.
It might be said that African-American folktales created modern hipsters. The hero was usually a trickster who was smarter than his oppressors, and that story continued from Br'er Rabbit through Huck Finn, Felix the Cat, and the superstar of folk hipsters, Bugs Bunny.
What you got in the basket, Doc?
I got me a wabbit.
No rabbit in there, Doc. You've been robbed.
No wabbit? Why, he...
Oh, you twixter! You're the wabbit. I'm gonna take this wabbit home and fricassee him.
He don't know me very well, do he?
I think that he taught so many Americans how to be hip. He sort of laid it all out. You have this great voice and you'd say, hey, what's up, Doc? And you're smarter than the person who's tormenting you, even though he's got more power than you. He's got the big rifle. But you are living by your wits and your own creativity. And what did Bugs do? I mean, he switched genders. He sasses authority. Bugs does everything that we would tell our kids not to do.
Wait a minute. This setup's too good. I gotta go back and heckle that character.
Chuck Jones, who was one of the great animators who did Bugs, thought of all his morality as coming from Mark Twain and Huckleberry Finn. And we'd read Huckleberry Finn every year. And Huck Finn has sort of the same tendencies that Bugs has. It's this sort of mischief maker and the troublemaker and the wise innocent.
Hip, of course, is no longer part of the underground. It's become a national obsession and a great way to sell products like iPods and Mini Coopers and Gap T-shirts.
So much of this history of hip is about being an alternative to the mainstream. And now almost everything is hip and almost everything wants to be an alternative to the mainstream. So where does that leave hip? When our athletes are not all-American boys, but they are swaggering rebels. And our preppies now can talk like 50 Cent, and they can buy tattoos at the nearest tattoo parlor. What is hip in that sense? And I think that hip, real hip, was never in the products in the first place. So real hip is what it's always been. It's that kind of enlightenment across these racial, class, ethnic lines.
While NPR didn't make any of his top 10 lists, excerpts from John Leland's book, Hip, the History, can be found at npr.org.